The most dramatic season in Bachelor in Paradise history culminated Tuesday night in the most confusing finale. Demi proposes to Christian on the beach, and then back in the studio, Christian returns the favor and proposes to Demi because, I don't know, do proposals not count in Mexico? Or did it have something to do with Demi's mom being in prison? Katie and Chris get engaged, then kind of sort of get unengaged, then kind of sort of get re-engaged, and now are re-unengaged, I guess? And Nicole loves Clay, but I guess doesn't like him nearly enough to date him anymore. It was all pretty unclear. But one thing's for sure. Dylan and Hannah get to split the spoils with Demi and Christian. And yet questions remain. As Kaylin and Dean take their act on the road and Tay PJ takes love for another spin. We'll get into all that, plus a first look at Pilot Pete earning his new wings in our championship game coverage here in the Bachelor Zone coming up now.
Welcome to the Bachelor Zone.
Welcome back to the Bachelor Zone, your spin-free zone for hard-hitting Bachelor stats and analysis. I'm your host, Michael Wally, coming at you from our home at Slingshot Studios in beautiful Honey Baby, Burbank, California. Here with me in the studio, as always, is Daniel A. Duddy.
How's it going, everybody? Ooh, let me try that again.
I thought it was good.
Let me try saying hi again. Hi, everybody.
It was almost like you were verklempt or something.
This episode, man, I am just, it's rough right now.
All right, put the needle back on the record. Here we go. Welcome back to the Bachelor Zone, your spin-free zone for hard-hitting Bachelor stats and analysis. I'm your host, Michael Wally, coming at you from our home at Slingshot Studios in beautiful Honey Baby, Burbank, California. Joining me in the studios, as always, is Daniel A. Duddy.
I can't do it. Hello.
Nailed it.
Folks listening at home will never know why that was so funny. And you know what? I'm not going to let you. That's going to be our little secret. Awesome. Should I
go again? Or what?
This is great.
He could edit around the hello with the first
take. I think you leave this all in.
Okay, yeah.
Leave it all.
Hell yeah. I'm feeling good. Let's go with it. As I continue to introduce one of our favorite guests, he's back in the studio, the big O, Michael Burns.
Yeah, I just made some ramen in my van outside after a nap, so I'm ready to go.
All right.
Sorry, it was a Dean reference.
No, it's a perfect reference because tonight's headlines are brought to you by Ramen Louisiana Fast. Let's jump right into it with this very exhausting championship game and then all-star game. We'll start out talking about the all-star game where Jordan, he brought up a really interesting point where he said that players should not be allowed to practice prior to going out to the beach in Bachelor in Paradise. And usually when Jordan says something, it's kind of met by the other players on the roster as in like an, oh, Jordan, there he goes again type of fashion. But when he said that, they seem to be really nodding and agreeing with him. And I think he might have a point. What do you guys think? Is Jordan onto something here?
Yeah, I think he's totally right. I think all the things that went wrong with this season of Paradise, and this was probably one of the best seasons ever. But that said, I think the finale kind of left a bad taste in my mouth, and I think that could be traced to all the meetups beforehand, all the Instagramming, all the, you know, it takes away from the game. And I think he and Cameron brought up good points about that.
Yeah, I mean, I think Jordan's the ultimate, like, broken clock is right two times a day thing here because he's an idiot and he's the worst and he should never be on this show again. But he was absolutely correct in saying that. I think that sort of off-season tampering just makes this season feel kind of icky. When you know that things aren't happening organically, when connections and teamwork isn't forming sort of out there in this new way. Because then there has to be things we didn't even hear about that weren't Blake-related that had happened. Other people that have been DMing and hanging out beforehand. And as a viewer, it just kind of takes something away. I feel like it could be very orchestrated.
That's a good point. Like if all of this rose up to the surface, imagine what we don't even know that was buried underneath.
Well, and was it Onyeka that said to Cam something like, 2 weeks ago you were asking to go to my birthday party so you could meet all the girls? And she kind of like lifted up the curtain there to be like, yeah, people are hitting us up. We're going to parties together. We have this underground network and shit like that.
Yeah, and it's kind of a disappointing thing to know that, to see it with our own two eyes, that these games aren't really on the level, and it's getting thrown off right from the get-go. And I trace it back to Chris. I mean, with Chris Harrison, first of all, the fact that Jordan and Christian, male Christian, were even there in the studio, like, either live up to the hold up the suspension or don't, okay? Live by your rules or don't. Because if you go half-ass about it, then you have this Roger Goodell inflated football is bullshit where we don't know what's going on. So stand up for yourself. That being said, I was happy Jordan was there because he did actually crack open a pretty interesting bottle here. I think that what Chris Harrison and the top office executives at the Bachelor franchise need to do is they need to become like the NCAA, where the NCAA has a very strict no team practices before you play rule. And not only is it a strict rule, it has become such a strict rule because they are so good at enforcing it. You could have a practice in No Country for Old Men, Texas, totally off the grid, and they'll find out about it somehow. It's annoying. I don't know how they do it, but they manage to have eyes everywhere, and it's very effective. I think so, Chris Harrison et al. Need to do the same thing and be that effective.
I mean, could it be like a PED type thing or something where, like, you, if you sign up to be in the league, there could be random surveillance of your Instagram account. You sign that over to a producer, they're dipping in and making sure. There has to be some mechanism that for all you get for being a part of Bachelor Nation, you got to follow the rules, and we're going to enforce them.
Random testing of Instagram. I love it.
Yeah.
But then do you take the phone, too? I mean, talk about all the things that happened with Blake and Kalen over the phone. Stagecoach was an in-person thing. Talk about, you know, podcasting with Derek and JPJ. That was a point of, you know, a contention. Should Derek not have his podcast? If you're someone who's already established in Bachelor Nation, how does that work? You know, there's a lot. There's a lot the league's going to have to enforce.
I mean, I think with podcasting, wait till you're out. Wait till you're a vet. You have that wisdom that you can impart. But like with Nick Vial, he started the podcast after he was officially out of the game. Mm-hmm. And we can say what we want about Nick as a player, but it was the appropriate time to enter the podcast industry.
He did it the right way. And then you have Kendall Long and Becca Martinez doing the exact same thing. They've retired from the game. Now they're starting their own thing. And I'm all for it. It feels like it's all on the level.
So that's the thing, then. You can't have a podcast until you're retired. You hand over your Instagram, your social media accounts, and your phone usage?
I think also you pass away your concert/festival privileges.
Or you only go if we're filming.
Oh, I love that.
If it's like a sanctioned thing, like when the NBA will go play a couple games in China, or we have some football games in London or something like that.
Yes.
We take the cameras with. So that way Stagecoach becomes something we can see. Maybe they buy a house out in the desert or rent it for a week, get them all in there, make a special out of it. Maybe digital only. I don't know. ABC should call us. We could help.
Because when the camera's there, that's when the pressure's really on. That's when you really need to play by the rules. And
you're not going to pull any crap if you know that there's producers on site.
I'm in favor of that. I think that's a pretty good idea to put the league on the reg. But I just hope that they have the resources to do it. You know, I hope that they have the wisdom to see what we're seeing. Because I don't think that's going to be – I think right now, if anything – they're going to take all the wrong lessons from this. I think they're going to go the other way with it. And I think they're going to incorporate more off-season play into the game in a way that doesn't have transparency.
Yeah, that seems like it's the writing on the wall, unfortunately, when really the ideal solution, as you suggested, Big O, is get the cameras there. If you don't have the budget for that, then I think you need to enforce that. If you come across somebody at Stagecoach or Coachella or whatever couch you're sitting on, you look the other way and you walk the other way. Just don't interact with each other. That needs to be enforced somehow. But then here we are with this finale, this championship game where a whole lot happened. But after the dust settled, you had Hannah and Dylan and Demi and Christian getting a share of the title here. Two very different teams, but ultimately two very effective, victorious teams. As we look back on the season years from now, fellas, which team do you think is going to be remembered more? Which team do you think made the bigger splash here?
I mean, as far as legacy goes, I would have to give it to Demi and Christian, having, you know, broken so many barriers within the Bachelor franchise. And not even just that. To me, and this has been a point of, like, this has been my cross to bear throughout this entire season, I watch Dylan and Hannah play, and to me it's like Billy Madison golfing. You know, in that
Billy
I am
Madison golf and not Happy Gilmore.
Not even Happy Gilmore.
Happy Gilmore. Excuse me. Yeah, man, Billy Madison was probably fine. I guess it was a little childlike, but yeah, Happy Gilmore. He's just cranking back like a hockey stick and just He has so much success, and I have no idea how he does it.
But Happy Gilmore teamed up with a veteran, and he got better as the season went along. And that's what we saw with Dylan here. He found the right teammate. Hannah, textbook perfection, exactly how you teach kids in summer league when we're in Little League growing up. You run the spread until you find the matchup that you like. Then once you find that matchup, you pick on it mercilessly, and you go at it again and again, exploit your strengths, and that's what she did, and that's why we have a title winner here.
Yeah, I mean, it's just two different types of great seasons. We will talk about Demi and Christian for a while because they did something very significant. It was very important, but let us not remember, they were just in a casual relationship already before this even started. If anything, the relationship dipped when she went there, explored stuff with Derek, and they got back together. There was no risk of them not being together once Christian was there, except for, you know, Flirtgate and all that. The Dylan and Hannah thing, would anyone have put money on that week one that Dylan was going to end this engaged with the belle of the ball? I don't think so.
I would have put money on Hannah winning a title because she's that good of a player. She has a max contract. She proved that she earned that money, especially in the playoffs.
But Dylan, without her, he's a development league guy. He was someone that, like, in the regular season floated around in the background and barely had anything to say. And then he comes in and gets engaged to the woman that men were fighting on the beach over. I think it was a real impressive victory.
I just don't understand how he did it. You know,
No idea.
I don't get what the appeal is. I don't see you're right. It was a win for the ages because you would have put Blake was on Hannah's radar. You would have given him all your chips in Vegas, whatever game we're playing.
I mean, she said love of my life to describe Dylan, who she had known for 3 weeks. He got that far in that time. And that's after wasting a week going back and forth with Blake. The ground he covered in 2 weeks of them being together exclusively is incredible.
It's extraordinary. To me, you know what is reminiscent of is Big Shot Robert Horry, where you have this player who, on his own merit, is a fine player, certainly not a Hall of Famer, nothing to write home about statistically. But then in the playoffs, he's just such a great teammate, and he comes through at exactly the right moments. That's what I saw here. Dylan is, in his own right, he's nothing really that special. He's fine, but he shined in this playoffs. And it was because he was such a good complementary player to the offense that Hannah was laying down, I think.
I guess the only thing that stands out here that makes it less impressive, still very impressive, we do have a blueprint a little bit, because I'd say this is reminiscent of Tanner and Jade. Mm. Tanner is someone who kind of seemed, you know, fine, but he kind of hung out in the background. Jade, who seemed like to be a very attractive, fun, desirable woman on her season, and now they're producing kids in closets left and right. So,
yeah,
maybe that's the future for them.
And if Larry Bird draft rules are in place, I may be putting money on that daughter of theirs to be the bachelorette in 20 years and maybe run the table.
Wow. I think just gray-haired Harrison inviting her on.
Yeah, Harrison will still be there.
Oh, he's never.
You know that, with Ben Clippy Higgins on his lap, feeding him almond milk. You're absolutely right about Demi and Christian. The fact that this will always be remembered for the unprecedented ground that it covered. But let's not forget the fact that from a gameplay standpoint, it was a very impressive season. They stumbled a little bit out of the gate when Christian first got there. They stumbled a little bit again right before the playoffs. But for the most part, during the regular season, week in, week out, they were really solid. They were a very dependable bet. And then in the playoffs, they took things to even another level. Christian, in the second half of this season, was so solid. If she had played that well for the entire season, I'm thinking potential MVP candidate.
Yeah, I think Christian is also a legitimate MVP candidate because, again, to me, when I watch the game tape, I see them have certain challenges, and Christian combating them and Demi combating them in the air quote right way, in the way that you would see in real life it also working out. I mean, to me, Demi kind of gave off vibes that she was uncertain. Some serious potential roadblocks for the relationship.
She's a 24-year-old in a game seven. Yeah, of course she's going to be feeling the pressure.
And she's the type of player that says, you know, she is uncomfortable with touching. You know, she's jealous. She needs attention. Frankly, she kind of reminded me of a girlfriend I had who was borderline. You know, there's a lot of things.
What was her name?
I won't say on this.
Are we talking borderline by Madonna? What are we talking here?
Like borderline personality disorder.
Oh, I thought you meant she lived in a town that was really close to two state borders.
No. Well, yes.
So many options.
Also, she was borderline in every sense. But you know, there's a lot of potential problems that Christian had to endure, and she did them, and she did them by being calm, by addressing those problems head on, by communication, you know, working great ISO sets. Like, it's just good, solid gameplay.
Well, and all of this with no experience on that field in that setting. I can't even imagine what that's like to go from the real world to, like, you are on the court, cameras are everywhere, plays are being called that you've never heard of before, and she just, like, went with the flow so well.
Yeah, this is one of the best examples of an older rookie, total rookie to the scene that I have ever seen. And you guys are absolutely right. Demi is the franchise player of that team. No one is going to argue that. She's just that good at the game. But Christian was the one who lifted her up and put her on her shoulders at key moments. And that's the difference between going home early and a championship run.
It reminded me of Any Given Sunday with Willie Beeman coming in just off the bench and winning the MVP. You know, it was a really impressive performance.
Yeah, also getting the engagement down on the beach is Chris and Katie, but they were not able, it would seem anyway, to make it continue to last once they got back to America. Let's play a little date doctor here with Katie and Chris, and then we'll do the same for Nicole and Clay because I want to get into that too, but... Starting with Katie and Chris, what went wrong here, fellas?
I think Katie wanted it too bad. I think Katie had too aggressive of an offense, and I think it wasn't a good fit team-wise. I think Chris wants to play a more reserved, controlled game, and Katie wants to go for the Hail Mary every time. She wants the marriage. She wants, you know, the kids and the picket fence and the dog, and I think Chris was plagued by, you know, he's a more cautious player who needs a more reserved setting.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think he really fought against the way he's played before and the reputation he's built in the league. And I think he overcorrected way too hard. And I think we saw that when he was kind of out on Katie in one moment of the penultimate episode and then swung real hard the other way to, like, I'm going all in. This is what I want to do. And I think he wanted to be a good player. He wanted to, like, live up to an ideal he projected for himself, but it wasn't him. It wasn't his game. And that's why we saw it fall apart last night.
And you know what made me absolutely sick to my stomach was Chris and Katie sitting on the couch together and Chris Harrison doing the doggy eyes at Chris and going, like, are you going to be better from now on, pal? You think you can do better, champ? Listen. I'm a huge fan of Katie. She's a friend of the show. But I'm not going to grab ass. I'm always going to be honest. When are we going to stop pretending that Chris running out of gas isn't at least partially, if not primarily, her fault? Because for the majority of this season, all I saw from both of them was a completely stagnant offense. The only time that they were ever on the move trying different strategies, different plays, is when a day card got plopped into their hands. That's what they needed to show an offense with any sort of inspiration behind it. Besides from that, every single time, it was run the ball down the middle, cram it down the middle, cram it down the middle. No creativity. And night in, night out, poor Chris is having to put the entire thing on his shoulders. And now Katie is borrowing our exact words that we've been saying the past few weeks. When we said what no one wanted to hear, that Chris is fatigued, that he's got nothing left in the tank. Yeah! No shit! Are any of us surprised? And more importantly, do you blame him? I'm not surprised. I don't blame him.
No,
this is on her.
We all saw this coming. Wow. We all saw this coming, and I think that's a really great point about creativity on offense. I think Katie, too, and it does feel a little bit unfair to put it on Katie. You know, I would definitely not say that. I think if there's one thing I could give Hannah and Dylan, it's they really recognize that this is a team sport.
Yes.
You know?
Yeah.
And I feel like Katie and Chris at times were doing battle against each other.
Mm-hmm. Two individuals playing for themselves.
Yes.
Yeah.
That said, I think it would have behooved Katie a little bit to work the spread, to go on those dates that, you know, that Chris was able to go on, to explore other options, if only to make Chris a little bit jealous, to make him realize that this is a primary, you know, this is the best teammate I'm going to get.
Yeah. That's something we've learned in Paradise as well. It benefits you to spend those first few days Playing pickup with whoever happens to be holding the ball that day. And that's going to benefit you moving forward in a relationship. And I think the way that she went all in on Bukowski so quickly, she forced a game on him. He wasn't ready to play. And this is where I disagree a little bit, Michael. I know Katie came in hot. She played her game. But Chris still put himself in that situation and lacked the knowledge to recognize, like, this isn't my game. It's wearing me out. This isn't how I should be doing this. So I put a little bit of the blame on Bukowski, but from our behind-the-scenes, in-the-locker-room footage they gave us last night, it was clear that this guy was hit like a ton of bricks.
He's got zilch left. He has nothing left.
He was wandering for a golf cart in that Burbank parking lot just trying to get out of there.
Guys, I think this is a Dan Marino – not even a Dan Marino case, because I feel like that's putting him too much credit, but I don't think this guy ever wins a ring.
No.
I think he's done.
I mean, he's 6 seasons under his belt now. God knows how much mileage. Clearly out of gas at the moment. How do you recover from this?
I mean, I don't think he will, but he needs to actually retire. He went out looking solid. You know, he didn't break any rules, didn't break any hearts in the traditional way that he has before. He got a pretty good edit. I just think, man, there's a lot of bars with his name on them in the River North neighborhood of Chicago, a lot of club appearances in places near Loyola University Chicago, probably not UChicago, not his crowd. Embrace your hometown and be the hometown hero. See what grocery store Joe is up to and hang it up.
I think that's a great point. And another thing that I look at with Chris is when you look at these player intros during the theme song, you have some people who are doing a gag a little bit. Katie herself doing the spyglass, binoculars. That's totally fine. You can joke around a little bit. But Chris doing the old man walker, that to me is exactly like the great Pacini last season with the bird on her shoulder, buying into this whole, oh, I'm terrified of everything bullshit. That's where Chris lost it to me, where he said, okay, you know what? They want me to be old man River on this show, and I'm going to play along with it. Instead of run the type of offense that I really want to run. And then as a result, I think both of you were right, that he got caught in this position where he's playing a style of game that in some weeks is effective and gets you the W's, but it's not true to yourself. And during the regular season, you build habits. And he didn't build the habits that ultimately helped him in the way that to win a title in the best way that he knew how, that he could. And while we're talking about building habits, you know, Katie, I think the last 2 weeks of the regular season and parts of the playoffs, she picked up the pace and she did a really nice job. Before that, the whole theme of it, stagnation. Just sitting on her laurels. You build habits. And you can have moments of inspiration for a little bit, but what you do those first 6 to 7 weeks, that's going to be what you are, the identity of your team as you go into the playoffs, whether you like it, whether you want to change it or not.
I think that's totally right. I feel like, you know, thinking about JPJ, for all of his flaws, was the king of boyfriends. You know,
yeah.
He came in with the prom date. That was not a date card event.
Oh.
You know, that was an effort play. We talk about effort players. That was an effort play. And both Chris and Katie, I don't know. You know, it was like Pat Schumer was coaching them. I don't know.
And it wouldn't have taken a lot either. I think the JPJ example is great. Like with JPJ, he's in a situation where I think a lot of us were, oh, buddy, this isn't going to work for you. But he went all in on that. If Chris would have done, like, I don't know, one luau-themed moment or something like that, or, I don't know, set up bat mitzvah setup and let her have that experience of becoming a woman in the tradition like that, just something little on the beach would have gone so far. He did nothing.
Or even, you look at JPJ, one of my favorite final touches was right as he was saying goodbye to Tayshia when he swept her off her feet for a second and walked her over and gave her solace in her moment of tears. Even something like that, Chris, I would have loved to see that, Chris. All would have.
Every time we saw him, he was half in a pool, arms on the ledge, staring into the distance, listening to Katie talk.
Yes.
Give her a bat mitzvah.
How much fun would she have at that? I'm guessing she didn't
get that
one.
Get her up
on the
chair,
yeah.
Get her up in the chair.
She's not forgetting that.
My cousin.
Have her read from the Torah.
Yeah, my cousin-in-law is Jewish, and so when she married him, it was a Jewish wedding. I've never had more fun in my life. It was amazing.
Thank God for that Jewish cousin-in-law.
Yeah.
I mean, where would you be if it wasn't for that?
Yeah.
I'm just saying, he nothing. He didn't come with anything. He didn't have anything in the back pocket that he was ready to throw out.
Yeah. And I think it goes to show you that in Paradise, you don't have to run a spread if it's not your style. You can be reserved, but you still need to bring energy. You can't rest on your heels. There's a difference between using up clock and being methodical and just being lazy. With Chris and Katie, unfortunately, we saw way too much of the latter. Let's move on to Nicole and Clay and play date doctor here a little bit. Nicole had a great regular season and is potentially going to win MVP at our Batchy Awards for the regular season anyway. Brutal playoffs, as far as I'm concerned, and Clay wasn't any better. What went wrong here?
Oof. A lot. You know, yeah. I think Katie and Nicole have a little some similarities in how much they how aggressive they were in their offense. I will say that Nicole benefited from running the spread. I think that is why she's going to get an MVP, where Katie really isn't in consideration. However, I also think that, you know, Clay and Chris maybe, but definitely more so Clay, was a great regular season player. However, he didn't do the necessary work in the preseason to prepare himself for regular season play, and certainly not for postseason play. And I think really his problems were just not mentally preparing himself for an engagement.
Well, and not only that, not mentally preparing himself to be on the same island locale as an ex-girlfriend and keep it together. I think seeing an ex-teammate threw him off so much. And as soon as Angela, right? I'm getting her name right. It was
right.
Okay. She didn't get a lot of screen time. So, but as soon as Angela was a part of the community, he completely lost it. Like an insecure little boy who couldn't play with her around.
He had a pebble in his shoe for the rest of the season after that.
100%. And then Nicole had no tools to respond to it other than yell, "I, Poppy, do more push-ups, por favor." That was mostly what we saw from them, was her day drinking and screaming at him while he did push-ups with stuff on his back.
I disagree with you a little bit on that. Nicole, I thought, took a leap forward as a young player in the league. And I think the major moment that I look back on is when Angela first came to the beach and she marched right up to her and said, "Look, here's the deal. Here's how it's going to be." That was, based on what we've seen from Nicole in the past, breaking down in tears over her halo top.
Yeah.
That could have gone really poorly, but she handled it very well.
She handled that really well, but Clay wasn't involved in that. She's able to take down Angela, but then where is that energy with Clay? Because when she brought that a little bit at the end, it just felt like desperation. When she pulled, like, "Fine, you need space? Go."
Yeah, is she, now that you say that, is she perhaps too ball dominant of a player? Does she take too much air out of the ball? Can she only succeed when it's in her hands?
No, I think that's a good point. I don't know. I also think, to Clay's detriment, I don't understand why they didn't take the fantasy suite card and use it to work on the relationship.
Right, yeah. Mm-hmm.
You know, it doesn't necessarily have to be for sex or for, you know, it could be just to work on fundamentals lacking in your game. And I think Clay, you know, I got to give this one, if we're going to assign blame, I got to give it to Clay, I think. I think he gave up too easily. He didn't really have the fight. I think sometimes you have teams that do really, really well and they face a little bit of adversity and then they just crumble. And I think that's what happened to Clay. I think he lost the fight.
Well, and he didn't really, I mean, he lost the fight, but in a way in which his first comment, I think, in the van leaving was, "Can we go to the local pub?" This wasn't a guy who was crying, who wasn't emotional. His thought was, "This is over with. I need to get a beer in me." I don't think he was really ever fully in it. He had like 1 foot on the bench, 1 foot on the field the whole time. And a lot like his NFL career, he was sort of hoping to get signed. He got close, but it just didn't. Sorry, I'm being mean about his NFL career. He was on a team this past season. I don't want to get him confused with Colton or some of the other lackluster NFL talent. But he never felt like he was really into it to begin with. I never really bought that he liked Nicole that much. I bought that he wanted to be there.
Yeah, to speak to your point, I think when he was forced to retire from the NFL, that might have been his first line. He said, "Let's go to the nearest pub."
Yeah.
I feel like he's that type of guy. I think we have two players who are at least good and on their best day are great. And I think that Nicole is evolving into a great player. But as we talked about with Demi and Christian, it's not about solely being great. It's also about being clutch. It's about lifting each other up when the lights get really bright and the pressure hits. Neither of them were able to do that. And actually, both of them made really huge blunders, really boneheaded moves. With Clay, a just total misunderstanding of what the fantasy suite is. In the fantasy suite, you can play Parcheesi. You can make s'mores. You can certainly talk about how you're feeling and work on your relationship a little more and lay the bricks down. Did he just have no interest in that? Had he already given up? Or did he just not know that that's what you can do, that that's an option? And then meanwhile, look at Nicole up at the pedestal with the faux proposal, saying, you know, you either, like, it's all or nothing. It's either black or white. No, it's not, Nicole. There's plenty of time left on the clock. You can go to Chicago with him, take things slow, get to know each other better, like he's interested in doing, it would seem. And then at the final rose, maybe you get the proposal then. The problem with Nicole is once the playoffs hit, she lost track of what made her successful in the first place. She cued the Frank Sinatra, everything had to be her way. And that's where she fell apart.
I mean, she bought into the logic of the game too much.
Mm-hmm.
And I think we've seen every season, the pressure on wearing a ring as you leave the beach seems like it's gotten heavier and heavier, such that it's this dichotomy. You're either gone and you're alone and you're sad, or you're flying back engaged. And I think Nicole wasn't able to find any room to distance herself from the intensity of that. Whereas there's some other examples of people who I think either got engaged with a little wink, like, sure, we'll do this, we're going to stay together, see how it works. Others who might be boyfriend and girlfriend now that didn't even make it that far because they were able to not get overwhelmed by the stakes of the game. And I think she took it too seriously.
Yeah, and she wasn't even able to pay attention to just what happened on her season that she appeared on of The Bachelor, where The Bachelor's final stance was, look, it's okay to not be sure just yet with Cassie. Let's go home and take things slow for a minute. It was a satisfying, it wasn't statistically, it didn't soar off the page. It didn't end in a championship ring, but it was satisfying.
I mean, Kaylin and Dean didn't end up with rings, but they left and they decided to be in a relationship.
And Tayshia and JPJ, the same thing. And they're in a good position now. We're definitely going to talk about them later in the show. But first, we need to get into all things swats, deflections, box outs, and down hard, gritty defense. Steal the Night's coming up. This is the Steal of the Night. Steal the Night this week, brought to you by Snapchat. Have you ever made yourself look like a woman? Let's talk about the defensive end of the floor here on the beach and in the studio during the All-Star game. Let's start with you, Daniele. Who's between the championship game and the All-Star game? Who's getting your steal of the night in this finale?
I think Jordan, the All-Star game, for just once again inserting himself and stealing all of the attention away from something that had nothing to do with him. Honestly, I think he gets steal of the night just for making an appearance, just for somehow snagging a ticket into the All-Star game in and of itself. I thought he was done from the league.
Yeah, he's in the back row with the reserves, but participates so much that he had starting player numbers by the end of the All-Star game. And when you think about the fact that he was in what? An episode and a half? Of this season. And he still had such a big impact on that All-Star game. I know you think he's the worst Big O, but an All-Star game situation, I think he's one of the greats. But does he get your steal of the night?
He does not. I might be breaking the category a little bit. I kind of want to give it to Tayshia, because she stole my attention. She stole my excitement. She provided the best moment of the game in my mind by getting on that flight. I'm going to guess it was a Southwest from, I don't know, Orange County near her Santa Ana home, connecting in Nashville to BWI Airport, going to, I think, St. Michael's, Maryland, where JPJ's, I'm imagining, his home compound is.
And which was called the secret town of the revolution or something like that?
Yeah, there's...
on the sign, like...
We could do a whole other podcast diving into...
I need to know more about this town that JPJ grew
situation.
Up in.
That situation. It makes sense, but there's a lot there.
Shrouded
but, I mean,
mystery.
She stole love back for herself. She stole what was sort of given up by her on that beach, and I think produced a romantic moment that, to me at least, rivaled anything that happened in regulation play. And I think that's a big deal to steal that much thunder when you weren't even on the court when it happened.
Yeah, I mean, let's put it where the goats can eat it for a second, about this three-hour finale. Most of it, as we were talking about before the show, was just utter bilge. It was just completely unwatchable, the worst things about the game becoming true. This was very refreshing. This was a player who said, you know what? Maybe I don't have a shot at a championship ring. Maybe I didn't have the best season that I could. Maybe I didn't live up to expectations. But I still love the game, and I still got some time left on the clock here to put myself in a better position than I was when I left Paradise and end things on a positive note. And I give her a lot of credit for that. It was like a rom-com, but in all the good ways. It's not going to get my steal of the night, though. I'm going to give it to – I'm going to put it down at the championship round. There's this unwritten rule where when there's a proposal, the person who does not have the ring and is in position to accept the ring tends to speak first. I don't know why that is or how that came about, but that always seems to be the case. It's an unwritten rule, and you all know me. I hate unwritten rules. I think they keep the game from evolving, and they just encourage the players to grab ass in ways that we don't really want to see anymore. Thank you very much. But in this Hannah Dillon proposal, Dillon took things into his own hand. He stole that moment before. I don't even know if Hannah was going to speak first. She might not have. She's that smart of a player. But even if she was, Dillon stole that moment and said, you know what? I'm going to speak first. I'm going to lay down the groundwork, and then I'm going to let you, Hannah, the franchise player, have the last shot and put the cherry on top. And it was a beautifully executed proposal. Whereas a lot of these other proposals, it sounded like it was written by a bad rom-com writer from the 90s, just overly long, overly sentimental. Both of their proposal lines were nice and terse. They were like nice little jabs. And it was a great metaphor of the season that they had. Both of them were Floyd Mayweather-like, where when you're watching the film, you say, you know what? I don't see anything all that exciting here, to be frank. I don't know if this is something that I've necessarily tuned. I don't know if this is box office play here. But it's very effective. It keeps winning, and this year it was undefeated. And that's why Dillon and Hannah Money Barber, or whatever Dillon's last name is, get my steal of the night. Coming up next, we're going to talk about some players where things didn't go so well in this championship round. It's Mayor of Choketown. Mayor of Choketown this week, brought to you by Ricola. Now, that's the stuff. Big O, let's start with you. I think there's plenty of candidates here. Who gets the keys to the city of Choketown in your mind?
This one's really hard. I think, like you said, there's so many candidates. I'm going to say Blake. And I say that with a full acknowledgement that he was not put in a good situation to succeed. There was a lot of forces up against him. But the last time we saw him, he was behind a curtain during commercial break, just broken down. And I think he showed a certain lack of resilience. And I think he let his guard up at the let his guard down at the worst moment and got just devastated. It was tough to watch.
Definitely tough to watch. Was it so tough to watch Daniel A that you're going to make this 2-for-2 for Blake Horseman?
I actually am going to make it 2-for-2. I think it was – part of me wants to give it to Chris Harrison. I do think it was a very unfair situation. Mm-hmm. I don't like how he commissioned the game. That said, damn, Blake, by now don't you get how this is played? You know, don't you get what this is? You can't be a real person in reality TV. You have to be something else, and you have to craft a persona, and you have to let that act as a buffer to protect your real ego, to protect your real identity. And for good and for bad, and clearly for bad here, I think what Blake did well that served him on Becca's season was that he didn't really have that buffer. He was his authentic self as much as he could be. But that was a fluke. In Paradise, You need something more, and Blake let himself. It was like watching a quarterback scramble and dive headfirst into five linebackers. It was just every single play. He kept doing it, and I don't know if this guy's psyche is going to recover.
Yeah, I mean, when you're playing this game, I think you can be yourself. I think you should be yourself and run an offense that's true to you. But you know what you have to be? You have to be transcendent. And I look at Blake, and going into the season, I thought it was a great spot for him. I thought he was a preseason MVP candidate. I thought it was a great place in the schedule for him. When I looked at how he played in Becca's season, I thought this is a really talented guy who's got a great opportunity here. And what we saw is a guy who flew too close to the sun and bought into the hype and grabbed and jiggled his own ass the entire season. And as a result of that, at our Batchy Awards next week, I'm considering giving him Mayor Chokedown for the entire season. The fact that someone of that caliber is not even able to make the playoffs, and not only not make the playoffs, but get eliminated in the most embarrassing, humiliating fashion. How does that happen? How does that happen? How did he let that happen? I will never understand that. No matter how many times I watch the tape, I will never get how he let it get that far out of his hands. It was a nightmare from the very beginning. He never grabbed control of it. But he gets my Mayor Chokedown for this particular night for sure, because as good as the play was for most of the season, there were a lot of Bush League things that happened. There was the Jordan Christian fight. There was what's the Siamese twins' name? Haley.
Sure.
Haley was one of them.
Yeah. Okay. Who called Luke S. the poor man's Nick Vial?
Uncalled for.
Absolutely uncalled for. Unacceptably rude. Totally Bush League. But I think the biggest Bush League play of all was when during the season Blake put Kalen's text up on social media and then backpedaled and then said, oh, this is causing too much of a fuss, which I think he knew would happen, but he pretended like he didn't know. And then he gets up in that hot seat and he continues pretend like he doesn't know that it would be a problem and that he was being a jerk. You can make mistakes. We've all been the Mayor of Chokedown at certain points in our life. Own up to them. Learn from them. Come back a better player. The other players on the floor even teed it up for him and said, Blake, just end on a positive note here.
Please, please apologize.
Please just apologize. You can really do yourself a huge favor here if you just say sorry. Not only did he make the mistake that put him in that situation, he couldn't even say that. You know what he can do? Get some very well-deserved keys to the city of Chokedown, where he will rule as mayor. And maybe he even keep them for the season as a whole. We'll find out next week. But first, we've got one more section of Ring Rose Road coming right up. Ring Rose Road this week brought to you by Happy Madison Productions. Don't get it twisted. All right, let's look at, we talked about how Hannah Dillon and Demi Christian, they come away with the championship rings, but we still have some couples who are lingering. Some of them look more promising than others. Let's dive right into it. Let's look at who's thriving, who's merely surviving, and who's driving on the 710 to Pasadena moving forward here. Starting with Katie and Chris. I think we pretty much said it, but you can cement it if you'd like, Daniel. Ring Rose a road for them for their future.
I think that's the road for sure. I think my therapist recently told me about a relationship I was currently in. I said to him, hey, listen, I really like this girl. Things are kind of rocky. You know, it's been very early on. And he said to me, Dan, do you want the truth or do you want to hear what you want to hear? And I said,
woo-hoo-hoo!
Wow.
Give me the truth. He said, it's not going to work out.
Ouchie, mama.
And I appreciated that. I appreciated knowing that chances are in your relationship that starts off this rocky and has this many problems, it's not going to work. They should speak to my therapist.
Shout out to therapy and inside information. It's all a good thing. Coming up next, underrated couple in Whitney and Connor. Big O, Connor participated in the All-Star game. Whitney didn't, but she was there supporting him. And he said things are going pretty well. Do you believe him?
Oh, not really. I think Connor wanted Kalen. I think he was really into that situation. I think he was embarrassed. Tall men are not used to losing. And a lot of people might not know this. He is 6'6". They don't often show him at such an angle that we get his towering heights. I don't know if any listeners have ever met a truly tall man. They don't take losing well. And I think once he lost to a mustached van dweller who went to the wrong Grand Canyon by accident, he needed a win to feel good about himself.
Are there multiple Grand Canyons?
Well, according to Dean, there are. He said on the show he went to San Diego, rented a car. Why rent a car when you have a van, Dean? Drove to the Grand Canyon, later told the producer it wasn't actually the Grand Canyon, but he thought it was.
Huh.
This is all real. I am not making this up. All that to say is Connor needed to get a win to feel better about himself. I'm sure he and Whitney are having fun. I think we're talking like a sort of decaying rose at best.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, between Dean mistakenly going to the Grand Canyon and Siamese twin Haley saying that because the Earth is 75% water, she couldn't possibly be a pigeon, according to Tajwan, we didn't have a group of scholars here, but we did.
Not a lot of advanced degrees on that.
Yeah, not a lot of PhDs up on the wall, but we did have some great players. Connor is a good player. I think based on how he played, he's earned the right to come back. And prove himself and take the next step in the evolution of his game. But I don't think that it's going to be with Whitney. Up next, speaking of the bane of Connor's existence, Kaelin and Dean, I'll take this one and say that they will literally be on the road because of Dean's van. But along the way, I think this is a rose couple that's potentially playing for the ring. I think they have a little bit of kinks to work out in terms of why exactly did Dean leave the first place. When he came back and answered for that, he gave an all-time maestro answer. It was just unbelievable offensive display. But that's still going to linger in Kaelin's head a little bit. And that's something that no matter how good an offensive player you are and how good a night you have under the palapa, it doesn't just go away right away. They're going to have to work some things out a little bit. There may be some nights where Dean's sleeping on the roof. But she seems into it. She's got a big smile on her face, except for when she was talking to Blake. She had a big smile on her face throughout this entire All-Star game. She loves having him in her corner. I think it's a good thing for them. I think I'll give this a year and a half window where we'll know for sure. At that point, I think we'll be able to judge if we got a ring material here, or if this was just a fling. Right now, I think they're heading down the right track. Up next, we have Tayshia and JPJ. What do you think, Daniel A? Ring Rose or Pasadena or St. Michael's?
Again, I think this is a situation in which if I told my therapist, I'm so glad my girlfriend doesn't listen to this podcast, by the way. About it, he would say, nah.
Well, what the
fun.
Fuck, man?
That's why it's not working out.
You can't even get your girlfriend to tune in.
That's
Jesus.
Why it's not working
wow.
out. Yeah, it's a bad look, you know?
Should we dial your therapist in and get him on the line? Just a little emergency call?
He's going to have a lot to
I
say.
I need him on Skype next week for our Badgie
He's
Awards.
He's
going
to have a lot to say. I think that JPJ and Tayshia. You know, when Tayshia off the bat says that she, you know, you got to listen. That's another thing he tells me. When people tell you who they are, you got to listen to them. You got to believe them. And Tayshia said that she didn't see a future with JPJ. She told it to his face and to the camera's face. They have that on footage for the rest of their lives. They're going to, what, they're going to play that at their wedding? You know, that's really tough. I think that that's something that right now they're playing off endorphins. They're playing off of. You know, just very good style of play, really great offense, but they don't have championship material, and it's not going to work out.
I'll just add to this. I once fell in love with a woman that spent a lot of time, or we spent a lot of time in the Eastern Shore of Maryland around those same parts, and you get caught up when you're there, and you feel things that you think are real, and then she cheats on you on Christmas with this out-of-work cocaine dealer.
So, I love this episode. Right
so now. I'm just saying things happen on the shore and that's great. But once you cross that bridge that I forget the road you're on, but it takes you through Annapolis back
or across the rail, apparently.
Yeah, it's not going to work out when you get back to the mainland. What happens on the shore stays on the shore.
OK, so do they need to relocate this franchise? Should JPJ follow Tayshia out to California?
I don't as much as JPJ has this sort of like pseudo surfer vibe. This boy is East Coast through and through. I feel
absolutely.
It.
Yeah, I totally agree with that.
He exudes the energy of the Mid-Atlantic.
When the second I found out he was from Maryland, it was, of course, now it all makes sense. He's not even that weird there.
No.
He kind of just fits.
He blends right in.
Yeah, bro. No.
But, and I just don't see a Santa Ana gal, just the jewel of Orange County, like Tayshia flourishing in an environment like that. But I think they're going to have some fun.
You know what, though? Tayshia, as we said, no, she didn't have her best season. But I love watching her play.
Oh, yeah.
I think she's a tremendous player. And when she's at her best, like we saw in the finale, it's really a sight to behold. One thing I love about her, too, that's underrated is that in baseball, when the catcher and the pitcher go out to talk to one another, they put the glove up to their mouth to make sure you can't read their lips. Tayshia got really good at that equivalent. There are a lot of times you saw her sneaking behind poles and putting her hand up so that the camera didn't catch what she was saying.
Genius.
That's a genius move on her part, and it shows you what a smart player she is, a player who's always looking to advance her game to the next level. And speaking of people that I love watching play, I love watching John Paul Jones play. He's just an all-time talent who is in just an unbelievable rhythm to end the season right now.
I mean, his bounce back was incredible too, because his low was real low.
Extraordinary, yeah. We were writing his obituary, but you know what? To his credit, he took it like a champion. He took it like the champion that he is, and said, "Okay, I'm going to get better. I'm going to do better," and then he delivered.
I think he has some flaws in his gameplay though that low showed that does make me worried. You know, I think John Paul Jones right now, he's an overtalker. You know, he's a bit of a mansplainer. He doesn't really pass the ball enough to his teammates. You know, he's playing glory ball. He's the one setting up Prom. He needs sometimes to sit back and let Prom be set up for him.
And let Tayshia set up Titanic painting? Come on now, he reciprocated a little bit.
You know what? I think Titanic painting was, honestly, I mean, maybe this is more to Tayshia's discredit, but I think that was a little bit weak. You know, that those brush strokes really weren't there. That, you know, what was that, you know? That was more for the cameras than for John Paul Jones.
Especially when she called him an iceberg. I still can't get over that they were doing a Titanic scene and she called him an iceberg.
I mean, that's real people died. We laugh. Real people died, and she's making jokes about that. It's read your history books. I don't know.
Yeah, and this is from a phlebotomist, apparently. But
yeah, which I, in fairness, I didn't know that was a real thing until recently. So one thing Tayshia brought into my life is I now know what a phlebotomist is. I realize I've seen them many times in my life, and they're great.
And I'm still not totally sure that it is a real thing. It might just be a figment of our imagination that we love to believe is true. Sorry to break that to you, but to make it up to you, Big O, I'll give you the last word. Because what we know is that Pilot Pete is going to be the Bachelor next season. Going into it, based on his quick interview and what we saw from him in the playoffs and the Bachelorette, is he playing for the ring, the rose, or the road?
It's ring all the way. This guy has the platonic form of the type of Bachelor that Harrison wants to be playing the game. I don't think he's going to excite us in new ways. He's not going to push the boundaries of the game. He's not going to jump over any fences and break the rules. But he's going to do everything he can within those boundaries and within those rules to give us a hell of a season.
Yeah, his interview with Chris Harrison, I think I couldn't have been any more impressed with that. I was just like, wow, this is a guy who is ready for the opportunity, is excited to have it, but is going into it knowing that he needs to be composed, and it's not always going to be there, but he is going to stay focused and he is going to be true to himself. I was very encouraged by that interview. I'll give you a word on that, Daniel. What did you think about the interview and just the season ahead of Pilot Pete?
I think Pilot Pete is kind of vanilla, to be honest. I think it's going to be, I don't know if I would have had I might have pulled from different seasons, to be honest. I think Pilot Pete, what I did like was that he is going to learn from Hannah. I think that's a great mentor for him to have. But I don't know. Mike clearly wasn't ready, but I would have liked someone who brought a different energy. Pilot Pete seems like someone we've seen 18 times right now.
Derek was thrown out there. Could he have? Do you think he could have pulled it off?
I would have liked Derek.
I would have been interested in that too. Yeah,
I just like he's so serious, and I think that's what would have done me in. There's a playfulness that I think Pilot Pete has. We're on like the really dumb dates when they're doing like painting their bodies and jumping against walls to make art in some like warehouse outside Phoenix. He's gonna make it seem fun, whereas I can't see Derek having fun. I mean, there's someone who would have been the best Bachelor ever, but he's moved beyond the franchise so much I'm not even gonna say his name because he's probably at Fashion Week right now with a family of models. His name is Tyler, and he got too good for the world,
right?
So
yeah, he graduated from the game and just went out hitting his last shot and number up in the rafters.
He showed up the first day of kindergarten. They gave him a PhD and put him in charge of Harvard. That's how quickly he worked his way through these ranks. Rest in peace to a season that will never be. But Pete's going to be fun.
Yeah, I mean, I think the decision is definitely a little vanilla. I was a little disappointed in that aspect of it. But once he started talking, I got a little more excited about it. I said, okay, this is a guy who's ready for this and is going to who knows what's ahead of him and is going to do whatever it takes to make this the best possible season that it can and play within himself. I think he learned a lot from last season. I think he's ready to take that and get even better and grow as the season goes along. Plus, to give you a little inside information, a couple weeks ago I was at Chicago O'Hare and this very loving couple sit down next to me And I quickly recognized them to be Pete Sr. and his mom, Barbara.
Oh, my God.
And they couldn't have been nicer, wonderful couple. So he's got a great example to go off of. Still haven't heard back from her about appearing from the show. I hope she does at some point. I'm proud of myself that I asked her to. Barbara, sweet numbs, if you're listening, come on our show. We would love to have you.
Before you even said that, I was going to say, I think she's going to get a lot of screen time, and I can't wait for it. We know that she's 5 miles down the road from the Bachelor Mansion. We got to get her involved. I think she's going to add a lot.
Oh, totally, yeah. She would she would bring just an amazing dimension to this franchise, to this Bachelor Zone thing that we've got going on. But, you know, even if she never shows up, we've still got the greatest fans who come in every week and listen to us. Thank you so much for checking us out on our social media, on Instagram and Twitter. If you're not familiar, the handle for both of those is at Bachelor Zone Pod. Check us out. See our live tweets and our posts. Check us out on iTunes and on SoundCloud for the listen. If you like what you hear, give us a rating on iTunes, subscribe to us, and leave us a review. We love to hear what you have to say. Like Pilot Pete appears to be, we're always looking to get better and take that next evolution. And we see you, we hear you, we love you. Thanks so much for tuning in every week and making this possible. We've got one more episode in the season with the Batchy Awards to wrap up Bachelor in Paradise. Can't wait for you to come and take you through that with us. It's going to be a great night. And I'm knocking on wood. I don't want to jinx it, but we just may have a very special guest who has never appeared on the Bachelor Zone before, but has appeared on a couple different iterations of the Bachelor Cinematic Universe. I'm not going to say who, so I don't jinx it, but it's looking pretty good right now. And if we get her, you're definitely going to want to be here for it. Even if not, it's going to be an awesome night. Until then, for the big old Michael Burns and Daniel A. Duddy, I'm Michael Wally, and this is the Bachelor Zone.